just enough.
We're going to get started.
There you go.
Penrose is here.
Okay, we'll do a roll call. We got Council President Bullock, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Street, Councilman Weiner, Councilwoman Diller. Valerie is taking the minutes, and I'm Joe Retta, co-chair. We have a couple absent. We have Councilman Bell, Councilman Powers, and Councilman Tackett is on jury duty.
And Smiley.
And Councilman Smiley is, I believe, at another meeting. What's the pleasure on the minutes?
So moved.
All second. In favor?
Mm-hmm. Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion. All right. We have any ordinances? We got one ordinance here, which is 12-104, which is in my district, and this is probably an ongoing thing. It's been going on for, I know, about 3 or 4 years, probably longer than that. The client's representative is here, but it was, I think it was two or three homes of residency that were purchased. And what happened was, a few years ago, there was a restaurant called Borders, and you'll see it says Eats on it, in Stanton area. And half of their parking lot towards the homes was in their district part. It was purchased, the whole thing was going to be purchased, and it was from an out-of-town outfit that purchased it. They built the restaurant, and the other part they never converted over. And it went through our law department, and I worked on it, I know, for 3 or 4 years on it. And Larry Tarabicos is here now. He's representing the client who was purchased the property. And I think this is a good thing, because what they're going to do, that whole thing was supposed to be commercial at one time, but they never changed the zoning where the homes were, the people who originally purchased it. So with that, Larry, take it away.
Okay. Thank you. Chairman and members of council, Larry Tarabicos. I'm here on behalf of the applicant, Fusco Enterprises, and Frank Vassallo is here, Mr. Fusco's grandson, and he runs the business now. Colin Diascanis is the project engineer. So, yeah, it's a little awkward to see it this way, but it's easier. This is Route 4 out here, and this is Route 7. And then the Route 7 frontage road that runs along here, the Border Cafe that Councilman Retta's talking about is located here. DCA is here. The Apex office building is the one with the doctor's bags up front and behind that. So just to orient you, and this property here is owned by Delmarva Power right next door. So this property right now has a split zoning. 1.92 acres is already zoned commercial, and it's a property that was owned by Tammy Marvel and Harvatin, who's the other family. There were three homes on the property. This property is zoned BP, and it's what's the subject of the rezoning. I'm going to fill in the blanks a little that Councilman Retta, tell you a little bit of the history on this, because it's a very tortured history.
Larry, excuse me a minute. We have Councilman Hollins here with us. Okay.
This property here is 9.2 acres, which includes the 1.9 acres here. This was all rezoned. I handled this 20 years ago, and it was rezoned to commercial. At the time, you had the Border Cafe going here, and another restaurant was going to go here. What happened, actually, is that there were six different owners that were assembled here. The two owners here, largely because a broker got a hold of them after the rezoning, but before record plan, the contract expired. And the purchaser said, let's extend the contract. And they said, sure, pay us more money. And he said, no. And they said, well, then we're not extending. And he said, well, I'm paying you more money. So what he ended up purchasing was all of the property except that 1.9 acres. However, they had already signed the record plan, and so their property lines went away. So there are no property lines. There haven't been tax bills. The owner of the Border Cafe probably been paying the tax bills forever. For 20 years this has been going on. They filed lawsuit against the county. They filed lawsuit against the owner. To be honest, it was Councilman Retta who went to Mr. Fusco, because Mr. Fusco doesn't do a lot of land development anymore. They own a lot of properties. He said to him, you own the property here, why don't you buy that too? And they weren't wild about it, but they said, okay, we think we can probably do something with this property. And so I, together with Max Walton, who was representing the owners, and the county attorney, Brian Merritt, at the time, we worked out a whole crazy settlement. But basically, they got their property back, and then they were immediately able to settle and sell it to Mr. Fusco. So we resolved a big problem that lasted for a long time, because this restaurant's been there and been very, very successful for many years. So what we're doing now is we're combining these two properties. It's a total of 5.6 acres. That building will be 21,000 square feet, retail and restaurant. We have way more than enough parking. We're at over 200 parking spaces, only 189 are required. And there are various improvements that obviously Land Use Department and Planning Board recommended in favor of the rezoning. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit, because I think it's interesting. I'm sorry, did you want to recognize
me? Yeah, thank you. It's Councilman Cartier has joined us.
And not just because Councilman Weiner asked that I send them information, but because it is interesting, actually, the what's going on out here. And frankly, what we have is interesting. There are a number of improvements that are going to happen because of this project. The first thing that's going to be done is that the entire stretch of the frontage road along the frontage of the property is going to be improved and widened. We're going to build the access road. The other thing that's an issue, and it's more of an issue for the county than for DelDOT, but DelDOT has stepped in, is this road now goes all the way back here. It's paved, and there's a lot of loitering. There's a lot of whatever that goes on back along this road. It doesn't go anywhere. It just dead ends. DelDOT has asked for us to take up all this pavement and create a turnaround right here, so that anybody that goes past this entrance will be able to turn around and leave. So we're building a turnaround. We had suggested that we could do a turnaround right on our property, but DelDOT wants a separate turnaround. We're going to lift up and remove all this pavement. And then there's some intersection improvements further down that they want done as well. But the more interesting thing is the bike and pedestrian and transit issues. We are presently, the DART bus stop is here. We're going to pay to move it here. There are three routes, Route 5, Route 62, Route 63, that serve this area, the Christiana Mall, Christiana Hospital, go back and forth to Rodney Square, several stops along the way. So DART and transit is a very important component here. Then if you see this green line, blue line, and then this path here exists. It is a bike and pedestrian path that exists in this area. We will be adding and building to it, adding to that and connecting it. Now, frankly, I was a little astonished and glad you asked the question, because I'm surprised we have all this down there, and it's great that we have, but nobody lives there. So it's an issue, I think, that the county should be looking at, and the county land use department ought to be looking at, is how do we add residents? How do we add bodies here, people here? Because it's great to have all these bike and pedestrian and transit assets, but all you have is medical offices, commercial buildings, but you don't have residents there. So adding housing into this mix, we're still doing this separatist zoning where we have everybody separated, and we ought to be adding more homes in here. That's just my own observation. After looking at this, it's all great. We've got bike paths. I mean, who's going to ride their bike and go shopping down there? Who's going to walk in this area? They don't live anywhere near the site. It just makes no sense. But we're going to put them in. So there's extensive bike and pedestrian improvements and transit improvements that will be made as part of this project, and Mr. Fusco and Mr. Vassallo have agreed to all of them. I mean, they all add up. They're pretty significant, but no one of them is any major cost, but all of them combined are fairly significant. So I think I've addressed all those points, and you know, some of these were more interesting to talk about. So that's all I have to say.
Any questions? Councilman Warren.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tarabigas, thank you very much for commenting in advance on transportation issues. transit and bike ped enhancements, and I couldn't agree with you more. I just want to add that, like you, I hope that we can take advantage of opportunities on roads such as this, where we can allow citizens to live, shop, work, and play without being hostage to single occupancy vehicles. With economic trends continuing, we need to provide affordability for communities that necessarily can't afford to live in separated large lot McMansions. Hopefully we're not building them anymore, and allow for our future generation to have the option to have housing within walking or transit or biking distance from where they shop and play.
Councilman Hollins and Councilman Cartier, do you understand the one that we're doing here is going to go from BP to CR, what we're talking about?
And yes, sir.
If you're familiar with the area.
Mm-hmm. Question.
Go ahead, Councilman.
What are the opportunities for mixed-use development under CR?
Is sure. that significant? Significant, yes. And I think it's a good question. I won't lie to you. Here we have, we're not being magnanimous by only developing 20,000 square feet on almost 6 acres. We have significant wetlands, so there's limitations. It's an opportunity, but I think more importantly, the issue here is, and I think Councilman Weiner makes an excellent point, and Councilman Hollins has said it before, this, for example, is an area where we ought to be looking to do some sort of proactive zoning to high-density residential all around the Christiana Mall, all around this area, where you can add some affordable housing with access to a tremendous amount of retail, medical, office, employment. We really ought to be looking at that, and in addition to mixed-use development. But this triangle here, and it's, I don't know that we can see it on any of these plans, unfortunately, but it is, you can see it on your location map if you look at this plan, but this area, this triangle, is an area that absolutely is ripe for that. There's a lot of properties in here, and Mr. Fusco controls a lot of those. So those are opportunities there maybe for some mixed-use development or high-density residential. But if you have to go through the major expense of a rezoning every time you do that, that's, you know, it's a deterrent.
Councilman Weiner?
Yes, one other additional comment. Again, concurring with counsel for the applicant, I hope that we can implement the comprehensive plan, which has laudatory language supporting vertical and horizontal integration of mixes of uses in locations such as this.
Anything else from council? Anything from the public? Yes, ma'am.
I understand this is the...
Can you state your name, please?
Donnie Shankey with the Rutherford Civic Association, former vice president of the Civic League for Newcastle County. The corner property you're speaking of is directly across from J.P. Morgan, is that correct?
Not directly across, but it's across.
Across. Is that one of the two pads that you originally many years ago had gotten approval for?
Yes.
Dave?
Well, yeah. It's part of it. But I'm sorry, I don't want to answer directly. Is that okay?
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
Now, I know a number of years ago there was approval for two pads.
Correct.
Next to the SPCM.
Correct.
You know, and this is one of those sites.
That's correct.
But it's not the corner property itself. It's not directly on the corner in the intersection.
You, when you say corner, you mean 4 and 7?
I mean 4 and 7.
That's Delmarva property. No, it's not.
Okay.
It's not.
Okay.
It's not that corner. That's owned by Delmarva.
I thought that was J.P. Morgan, or the bank years back had owned that property originally.
Well, it's Delmarva Power now.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. But your plan is for this is a commercial development, correct?
That's correct.
And what is it currently zoned?
It's zoned, it's half, a third of it is zoned, this portion here is zoned CR, and this portion is Business Park, BP. You couldn't build BP on this property, it's not big enough.
Okay, thank you.
I neglected to say that, but it's in the Land Use Department's recommendations.
Anything else from the public? Okay, we'll move on.
Thank you.
I have a discussion on the effects of unpaid taxes. I have on a permit issue for home repairs. Councilwoman?
This is something that I had talked with Councilman Tackett about.
I hope my brain doesn't explode as I try to explain this situation, but it's one of those, again, for the second time, I've had a homeowner who's had, who bought a house with an unpermitted expansion on it. Somebody took the garage, converted it to a family room. There was no permit pulled on it. Now the gentleman wants to sell the house. But there are taxes, unpaid taxes. So the guy has a buyer lined up and needs to finish the repairs to bring this thing up to code, which of course he didn't know he had to do prior to finding out he had an unpermitted expansion. So the issue became whether or not he could get a certificate of occupancy with the unpaid taxes in order to go to closing. If he went to closing, he could then pay the taxes. Dave, I called Dave and I said, this is a really bizarre situation, but if we don't give the guy a permit, can he really sell this house, right? Can he really do this? And it seems to me that situations where people have ended up on the hook for something that has been done without a permit, it seems like they really ought to be able to get a break on the tax issue here, because they're going to get the county will get the taxes at the point of sale, but you know, for a couple of weeks before this, the guy didn't even know that he had a problem, and this is the second one that I've dealt with. In you know, and the first one, it was a terrible situation. The guy who did the construction without pulling the permit was actually, well, without completing the permit, was a contractor, and the person who bought it didn't even know it. So it seems to me that when people have this situation, they ought to get cut a break on some of these things.
Well, I would say I would agree with you up to a point, but also I sat on the Board of Adjustments for a number of years, and we had a lot of this that came forward to us. That people would buy a house and there was a, just as you explained, no permit taken out, and there was a structure on there, and before they sold it or had something else done to the house, they had to get it inspected before anything would happen.
I agree with that, and they weren't arguing about that.
Right.
The issue had
no,
to do
I
with...
No, I understand what you're
yeah.
saying, but I'm just telling you how it came for the Board of Adjustments to us when I sat there, and we had a number of these companies. I believe Councilman Weiner has a question or answer or something.
Just a suggestion. I'd like to address this to Assistant General Manager George Haggerty and to Carol Doolin, our counsel to counsel. It occurs to me that this problem might be fixed with some partnership with the real estate section and the Delaware State Bar Association. It's pretty standard operating procedure at real estate settlement for the attorney for the purchaser to provide a letter,
right,
a certified letter, that something will be taken care of at the time of settlement, which
right.
and this ability could be made a standardized protocol, and the way that we could amend the code would be cooperatively with the real estate section, Delaware State Bar.
I understand what you're saying, but also the same thing, when the lawyer that goes to settlement for the purchaser of that house should have done his due diligence to find out if there's anything against that house or what was going on with that house.
I agree. Just asking now if I could get some comment from George Haggerty and Carol.
George is right over there. Yeah. Do what?
I would just George? Get some comment. George.
I'd be glad to let Carol go first.
Okay.
You're in the box, Carol.
Well, thank you so much. I'm not entirely sure of the concept that you put forth. I understand that you said you wanted to work with the real estate section of the bar, that the purchaser would take care of it.
The purchaser's attorney would send a letter certifying that the matter would be taken care of at the time of the real estate settlement. that puts that attorney's license on the line to make sure that it's taken care of. It's pretty much standard operating procedure with a number of expenses similar to this.
But it's optional.
Once that attorney, yeah, it's optional.
I mean, the buyer, I'm sorry, excuse me, I don't,
right.
I mean, my understanding is that the buyer doesn't have to agree to.
Well, I understand, but then it gets deducted from the amount of money
right.
that the seller would get, so no
but
one's out of pocket.
I don't see that that's not an option now.
I don't either.
It is.
I don't either, so.
So I don't see why we would go through some huge monumental effort.
Well, I just learned from Lisa that it's an option now, so I don't think it's a problem.
I want to ask George first. Okay.
Yeah.
George, you want to take over?
George Haggerty, Assistant General Manager of the Land Use Department. We're just bound by the code. The code says you owe taxes, you don't get service. It's a pretty simple line. And that's the line that we're obligated to. If you all wanted to change the code, you know, we could come back and have a discussion on the pros and cons of doing that and the pros and cons of us managing other people's finances along the way. I understand the difficulty. I mean, actually, I had a conversation with
right.
Councilman Tackett.
And I appreciate your advice there.
Perhaps they could put money in an escrow account to try to finalize whatever transaction they needed to finalize in order to get done, go to settlement, taxes paid, we issue the permit, they finish up the work. And the people responsible for their problem have to fix their problem. It starts with the settlement before this settlement.
Yeah.
Or somebody missed something. In today's world, we're getting much better at that. With computers, we're getting much better at that. And we actually have some system in place that allows you to, something short of getting a permit and getting an inspection, we have a certificate of awareness available if it's an older project or something older that was done, where you can get a professional to evaluate it. The difficulty the department has is there's a couple key ingredients and components for us. We inspect off of approved plans. In other words, we just don't go out and make it up. The plan has to be reviewed, has to be approved, and then we inspect off of that. Lots of times people want us to just come kind of take, well, look at this and look at that and guess at this and hope for that, and it puts us in a difficult position, that, you know, the members of the organization. So we, as a rule of thumb, we inspect against the plan, so we're not asking for something more than a plan. We're not looking for something less than the plan. We're just looking at whatever that is on that plan is done. So that's where it becomes kind of difficult to do. But the first piece is, and I actually read Valerie the section because I looked at this as a agenda item yesterday, I guess, and I read her the section of the code. It just says that's where we are. Next question is, could we have a payment plan or something along those lines? Well, there actually is, in my understanding from the finance department, a payment plan for taxes. But that doesn't mean that your taxes are still not delinquent. You just have an ability to work an arrangement out with them. This code doesn't get into that particular piece. And again, I don't think we're at the point where we want to talk about the pros and cons of doing this, but I'll leave it, we're bound by the code.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
I think he probably answered what my question was going to be, because in the discussion that they were having, they came up with a process, but I thought missed the fact that the taxes weren't paid, which is really the big issue.
Mm-hmm.
That all, if the taxes
right.
were paid, this all would be moot.
Right.
It
could be taken care of much easier.
Right.
Right.
So the fact that we don't give a permit because the taxes
aren't paid
is the issue.
Right.
Councilwoman Dillard?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm appreciative of George for his suggestion, you know, which made things, which evidently the homeowner pieced this whole thing together, and I didn't hear back from him, so I think George's suggestion, you know, flew. But the issue really is, particularly in these situations where the homeowner, I mean, you can say somebody didn't do their due diligence when they bought the home, but when it's like 10 or 15 years before, and some of this stuff was probably buried somewhere in, you know, archives, they don't really know. And this is the second one that I've had in, you know, in the district where, you know, the homeowner was really going to pay a substantial amount of money for something that they never even caused. And so, you know, what I said to Dave is we're putting people between a rock and a hard place. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. If the guy hadn't called me, if I hadn't called Dave, if Dave hadn't called George, there was nobody who would have given him the option of the escrow account at the settlement. And you know, one of the things I said to Dave is, could somebody have done it on the other side with assessment? Could somebody have said, maybe there's another solution here? I mean, you know, people run into trouble, but the guy did sell the house. The guy was trying to make good. He knew he could pay all of this if he could just get all of these pieces together and sell the, and get to settlement. And I just think, you know, if he hadn't taken the initiative, we would never have gotten an answer that helped him get through the situation. But he wasn't getting it from the other end when he knew he had the taxes due. That's part of my concern.
Mm-hmm. And that would be part of my concern too, that somehow we don't talk from, even within the same departments, we don't mm-hmm. talk to each other. So it's, from my department, it's no mm-hmm. for these reasons. But then there's never, unless they come back to one of our aides or one of us, there's nobody looking out for them that says, but let me connect you with such and such because
exactly.
they may be able to help you.
Exactly.
So whether there's no cross-training, whether people don't care to help other people, I mean, I believe that that is the crux of a problem in many instances mm-hmm. in the things that we or our aides work through in this county. It's just communication.
Anything else from council?
You may hear more from Dave on this one.
Okay.
When he
gets out
of church duty.
Council Street, do you have your hand up?
No, sir.
Okay. Anything from the public? Okay, move on to number 5. Discussion of the possible ways to log vacant homes in Newcastle County using the Smart 911 system. Anyone from land use on that? Or
I believe Jim Smith was supposed to come, but I can give a brief update. Jim McDonald from the executive office. We've looked at Smart 911. It doesn't seem like that's going to be an alternative for us because Smart 911 is based on telephone connections, not geographic locations. But we have found that Hanson does maintain an inventory of vacant houses, and we're going to do some research to see if we can create a trigger to populate the portal for the police for vacant properties so that the district cars will know unsafe vacant properties. So we should be out of an update in a couple of weeks on that.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions from council on that? Okay. Since there's nothing else, we'll move on to number 6, presentation and discussion concerning recent flooding in residential areas.
Jim, you have the magic thing.
I didn't know that.
Well, we're all interested now.
The magic click or whatever that is. Folks, this is Welsh Hill Preserve. It's between 896 going into Newark. It's very close to I-95, and the other side of it is Otts Chapel Road. So that's, you know, you go on Welsh Track and you're between 896 and Otts Chapel. If you look at this community, the Google map that Jim pulled was in May. There may have been one or two houses built since then, but it doesn't look dissimilar to this because I just rode around it before I came before I came in here. What you got in your packet is, you know, basically what happened to the community during this last big rain. My particular favorite is the situation where the trash cans are floating along on the, you can see the entrance there. This is, you know, this is what's going on here. Now, if you look at it, it's not large, you know, it's not large. It's really that, just that one street. But you can see, you know, as you go through these slides, Jim, if you just want to keep moving through them, you can see the water flowing down there. The next one, water sitting, flowing, and just kind of sitting there on the road. And then, I mean, this is a new, this is a new community. And so, you know, all of us have communities that have flooding problems, but aren't we supposed to mitigate against this when we build new communities? I mean, if we approve this, aren't we saying that the engineering works well enough that these people shouldn't be having this kind of thing? I mean, just a question.
Councilman Bardet?
Here's the big problem we're running into, and it's just not in your particular example here. You know, all of the stormwater protection that goes on in new subdivisions, to my understanding, you know, is built to handle a certain amount of water volume. The problem we're having now is we're getting storms that, you know, don't fit those profiles, are far in excess of what we're engineering for. And frankly, in some cases, you know, I know several examples in my district and Brandywine under in general, there's no engineering you could do that would reasonably protect, you know, against the problem. So welcome to global warming and, you know, deluge rains and, you know, pocket storms, which just dump, you know, ridiculous amounts of water in very small areas. And it's going to be a growing problem, not a lessening problem. We're going to have to, I mean, it becomes a matter of what's economically viable, how much stormwater management do you want to, you know, design for, what is the limitations of that, you know, so forth.
I agree.
Councilwoman?
In looking at some of these pictures, and I don't know if anybody had dealt that out to look at this, but it looks like curb and gutter with underground drainage to me. In new construction, in many cases, those drains aren't opened until the construction is done because they want to catch the silt. They don't want it all running down through the drain. So that may, considering how new this is, that may be one of the problems. Looking at where the drainage is, it looks like it's coming between the houses, not at the houses, which means that the swales are working, so it's running from somewhere, sheet flowing off into the road. But you can see here that those drains look like they still have the blockage in them. You know, and that probably won't come off until they put the final coat on, because otherwise you're going to, I mean, what you have now, and you're going to probably see this in winter, is you're going to have the ice, because the construction grade of the road is not up to the gutter area, so there's nothing that's going to flow unless it's a really heavy storm. Even if they would take that out, there's nothing that's going to actually get to those grates right now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, we're getting heavier storms. I don't know that in those kinds of storms that this is so unusual in a community built with underground drainage. If it was open swale, I would say that was a whole different story. But it, with this, I don't know that that's so different than what we've seen in most of the other communities, understanding the amount of rain that comes down in a short amount of time.
But my question is, if this is the new normal, what are we doing to change this?
Well, I believe the councilwoman explained it pretty good, and so did Councilman Cartier. We're getting a heavier rain, but at the same time, these are like filters on there, basically. What they do, they put put it on it so it catches all the dirt and stuff, so it doesn't go up. And they have to be cleaned out periodically. Now, that's up to the developer, the contractor, whoever's doing the work, who has that assigned on them, usually to clean them out once in a while. Now, I don't know their situation on how they do it and how it was written up for them, but that's generally what they do. It's just like when they have a storm water pond, they go out and clean them out, too. They have an area where the water goes down, or that comes from a runoff and goes down into the pond. They have an area there that they have to clean out, and they have to do it periodically.
At what point, and I'll address this to Janet because she would know these things, at what point do those drains get opened up so that they function as
normally
drains, not as blockages?
Just like she said, when they're done.
And that doesn't answer my question.
No,
usually at the end of the project, George can, maybe you should ask him. I mean, he certainly would know more. I mean, my answer would be at the end of the project when the road is complete. But DLDOT is the enforcement agency at this point.
Right, okay.
That they can come out and inspect what is going on out there, and they can make the developer change some issues. I mean, I've seen that happen in new construction, because especially as winter comes.
Okay.
Want me to take a shot at this?
I do.
Go for it.
Assistant General Manager. You see the orange around there?
Right.
They're actually sediment bags laying underneath of that. In cases this time of year, when we have enough notice, we understand a big storm is coming up the East Coast, a hurricane or something like that, we kind of mobilize with DLDOT's permission and get to the construction sites, because we generally have more of a presence on those construction sites. And if we knew a storm was coming, had enough time to make that adjustment, we would have those removed, which would just say we're going to take what a little bit, what sediment comes for that, for the sake of safety, and we're going to do that, and we'll put them back, you know, afterwards. They're generally removed as it greens up, because they're designed to catch sediment. So as the construction activity slows down, the large bulk construction activity slows down, where we get the construction activity that we can control it on the lot itself, as opposed to, you know, some bigger areas, we'll start to remove those as well, because they do, you know, help with flooding. Jim, if you'll go back to the picture with the trash cans, because Councilwoman Diller and Councilman Tackett called us and talked to us about that, and we actually went out to take a look at this, sent somebody out to the site. Those trash cans, this is a opportunity for a perfect storm to get more perfect. Those trash cans were full of trash, and they actually got knocked over, and they actually wound up clogging the drains as well on top of the sediment pieces. So that's why you get that about 15 or 20 minutes, I think, after that storm passed, things had calmed down, you know, significantly. That storm started with a tornado touchdown just on the Elkton-Newark Road side of this, went up and took a straight line, right straight up, went through Rutherford. We had a problem in Rutherford that we could confirm, and we had a problem at Colony North, and we had a problem right off of in Brookhaven, Brookview.
Brookhaven,
the one that backs up to
Rutherford, Brookhaven.
It's the one that backs up to Greenville Overlook.
Brookmead.
That's it. And the folks at Brookmead live on a single road. They had a problem in part of the their little bridge collapsed, and they were looking for. They wanted to believe that the Greenville Overlook folks had. Toll Brothers project had not built the stormwaters properly, the facilities properly. So we went out, we took pictures of all the facilities, the catch basins, and as well as the storm facilities. None of them topped over in that event. And there's a small percentage of that drainage area that went to that particular area is Greenville. From the pictures that we saw, we were satisfied that they were not the problem, that the other area was the problem. But in a straight line, about 2.5 to 3 inches of rain occurred in about an hour's period of time, equivalent to about a 500-year storm event. We have some numbers from the Shellpot that talk about how fast, you know, the normal flow versus the flow that was occurring, because we have some meters there that we could actually, you know, take a look at and see. And it's a, and it really wouldn't matter what you had there. You were going to get water. The good news is that we're not seeing what we see. And when you turn the picture, the TV on today in Colorado, we're not seeing that kind of devastation, that kind of event that occurs. And Councilwoman Kilpatrick, thank you for pointing it out. You also see that what we are protecting in the stormwater activity is the buildings themselves. This job's project's not finished. It's got a ways to go. Those were some of the contributing factors that added to it. And as we go along, we're always, you know, looking for more. There is a new set of Delaware state regulations that are coming out, have been promulgated. I think I've got the right terms, been promulgated, and should be seeing the light of day sometime around the first of the year. They're not going to add significantly to what we do, but, you know, as there is another attempt to yet try to start to update. It's kind of illogical in today's world to believe that the engineering practices or the any practice that we used 10 or 15 or 20 years ago is going to necessarily be in step with what we see in today's world. So they are being updated. We've had a set of proposals on the books for, you know, a long time. Hasn't got there yet. We've all talked about them from time to time, about 4 or 5 years ago. Most of what's there we're implementing anyway. Going more to a volume control process than a pipe and pond, you know, control process where we try to take the volume and cut it down and keep it on the site or as close to it as possible.
Councilwoman?
So what do I tell my constituents?
They had a really bad rainstorm.
It'll get better.
But this isn't the first one that they've dealt with. That's why I got them this time, is that people were getting frustrated over the fact that this has happened a number of times. Now, one thing I think I can take away is that they need to be talking to their state rep and senator to make sure that they're on the list to get those things removed if a storm's coming, right? Is that a reasonable?
No, I think that's probably going to be on us and in cooperation with DelDOT. We have really forged some good working relationships with those inspectors on these job sites, and I think that the storm just happened quickly. If you recall, the storm just came up on us, and I'm like driving to work thinking, where did this all come from? During the normal hurricane season, we're pretty well in tune with all of that to be prepared. If we don't have enough time to react, you think about the amount of time it takes to make the call, convey the information to the person that's going to remove the sacks or the ENS controls. You know, it takes a little bit of coordination, and if you got somewhere in the neighborhood of about 86 to the 93 active sites going on in Newcastle County, sometimes it takes a little bit of time to do that. In the ones that we felt were greened up enough, we just worked with DelDOT and said, look, we just want to get them removed. We don't want to take this chance anymore. It's a zero-sum game in the return for us in terms of the ENS piece. We think we got it covered. So we're going to take responsibility for that. We're going to try to, you know, we'll work with them, you know, along the way.
Can I just make one comment that if you want to try to explain this to them, the mud that you're seeing in the road here, if those were removed and all of that mud goes down into their drainage pipe, as it slows in the drainage pipe, it drops that. So you're building then silt up within that underground pipe, which means that in the next rain, even if it's not as bad, your flow isn't going to be as good.
Right.
So there's, you know, the good and the bad. I mean, this is a construction site. From the pictures that I've seen, I know it doesn't look good, but it's really not, they're not going to believe this, but it's not that bad. I mean, as long as your swales are between your houses and you're running that water out to where it's supposed to go, that's what's supposed to happen. But if they built all in one place, all those houses, those 15 houses or whatever that were there, if they were all in one place and that section was done, then that would be another story, because then they could open up the drains depending on how their systems run. But because you've got spattered houses all over, they're never going to get that all done until they have build out, or they're essentially not going to get it all taken care of. They have very little grass here. There's probably very little infiltration. There's nothing catching the water as it's running down these slopes when it's running that fast.
Well, I mean, one of the questions that I have to ask myself is that if we know that the rate of building is slower than it was 10 years ago, which seems to be pretty realistic, I mean, you can see in that area, if you drive around, there's a whole lot of trees that were cut down to do that. I mean, when we approve sites, do we need to maintain more of that greenery in order to suck up some of this water? I mean, this thing is going to go on for years like this because of the building level. I mean, can you really drive through those streets like that?
How fast does it drain? I mean, my assumption is that once the storm was over, it drained pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to have that kind of drain in front of my house, because the last rain we had, I had it up to my front step. And I lost the car in front of my house.
And if you have open swale drainage, it looks like that in front of your house in every rain.
Okay, well, that's going
to
be a cheerful...
Welcome to our development world.
Yeah, it's not all city limit.
I'm giving them George's number.
You reapportionment can't come too soon, right?
Move on to number 7.
Excuse me.
Yes, ma'am.
Has the public make a comment here about drainage?
Go ahead.
As I said before, my name is Donnie Shankey, Rutherford Civic Association, and this is Nancy Decker. She's the vice president of the current Civic Association. I'm sure everybody here, I'm sorry, Dave. Yeah, I'm not used to having Dave with me. Dave Pudman, he is our with the Civic Association, too. We also have had major drainage problems, okay, flooding issues. I'll pass these pictures down to you and look at them. We were even more significant drainage problems than this new community. But I have to take what George said, that engineering 10, 15 years ago should be different today than what it was 10, 15 years ago. Our community is almost 50 years old. We originally had swales, Janet. You know
right,
that.
I do.
We originally did. But in 50 years, people had things filled in. We have a drainage ditch that is a tax ditch. It's a legal separate entity that those living alongside of it had to pay fees for its maintenance and upkeep. At one time, the drainage ditch was cut open so that you could see the ditch behind the homes, two streets. Okay, it's been closed in. It took $450,000 taxpayer money, funded by our state representatives in Dover, to close in the ditch. Of course, a year after they closed it in, people had problems because it turns out they used the wrong size pipe in the ditch, you know. So there's $450,000 down the drain. Senator Peterson has paid for $250,000 worth of drainage issues. There is no resolve there. Okay, the current issue now, we have this super Wawa and this Chick-fil-A wanting to build on that corner, that intersection where MBNA had property and is now owned by Bank of America. But we have major flooding issues. We can't take another drop of water in this area. And we also are looking into legally why commercial developments such as MBNA, Christiana Hospital, the Omega Shopping Center across the street are allowed to funnel their water through retention ponds directly into the tax ditch. those first few photos you see on there, that are the severe flooding, that's the tax ditch. Now, you can't see the ditch because the water has flooded the houses on either side. And where is the water going? The water is being funneled downhill, because we are downhill from those commercial properties, okay, to the Amtrak culvert, which is at the back of Rutherford. Amtrak has two culverts down there. One's a little bit larger than the other. But the idea was all this water would be funneled down to that culvert and then eventually drain into, I believe it's the White Clay Creek down that way. Well, during the last storm that you mentioned, okay, people were going to have to be rescued from their homes because there was no way out. You know, there was absolutely no way. Colorado, the guy on the Weather Channel said, had 17 inches of rain in 3 days. Okay? Is that the new normal?
Yeah.
You know? If it is, okay, number one, we need something done about drainage. Number two, we can't have any more commercial development. I've been there 34 years, 35 years coming up now. Okay? I didn't even need a sump pump when I moved into my house. Okay? Now I could use two sump pumps. Everybody I know has a sump pump. Okay? And we are panic-stricken when the power goes out, as it did last year under Sandy, when it was all one side of the street lost power. The other side, they were still able to use their sump pumps. But the fact of the matter is, Newcastle County, okay, approves plans for commercial, retail, and residential development. They are supposed to review drainage plans, just like this new development, okay? Somebody should be assigned to be on top of this. Okay, somebody should be working with communities to help out in this regard. As I said, we will not allow another commercial development to be built until the drainage issues are resolved. Okay, and we are going to probably have more pictures in the future if these storms continue that will show you that people are going to be locked and maybe need rescue. You know, if you have to bring the Army National Guard or whatever in there to rescue people, you know things are really bad. And we will make the loudest squawk you have ever heard, our community, because we are really organized. At the last meeting at Mill Creek Hall, we had 100 people show up, okay? And we have more people coming, you know, in the area, all right? We do not want any more commercial development, and we want the drainage problems solved. There. Thank you for your time.
Councilman Cardenas?
Everybody around this table knows that, you know, given the way weather patterns have developed, and the fact that we have so much of this county that had very little stormwater engineering on construction, I think the new construction is much better, and we have very strict standards. But we all know that we are lacking a critical infrastructure piece in this county. We have roads, roadway drainage, sewers, developments have drainage, but we are having greater and greater problems with flooding. That's why back in 2005, 2006, the state government gave this county government a large grant to hire consultants to develop a stormwater utility concept. And stormwater utilities are in operation across the United States of America very successfully. And the main idea is to create a stream of capital that you can bond to do projects to address chronic problems with drainage. We have that study on a shelf. They developed the scope of that work for that utility, a rate structure, and you know it's sitting there. Maybe it's time we pull it off the shelf, blow the dust off, and really take a serious look at, you know, implementing that concept. Because I can tell you that our state legislators, they do, you know, great work helping our communities, but it's a Band-Aid. We need a comprehensive approach utilizing a stormwater utility methodology that a lot of local jurisdictions across this country are utilizing today to address this problem. Otherwise, you know, we're going to be just facing, you know, these kind of episodic problems, like when Councilman Sheldon was elected with the flooding in his district back in 2004, where we passed a $17 million appropriation to address that issue. we're going to be faced with that kind of, you know, responding to, you know, episodic crises rather than implementing this comprehensive approach. So it's something that's there. We probably should be going and looking at it. And that's my recommendation when I hear stories like this coming out of the public that attends our meeting.
Yeah, I know. I have half a community right now. It's called Glenville. There's only a few homes left there. The rest of them are gone.
Mm-hmm.
I know somebody lives right there.
And that was the same time I got in. Councilwoman?
And this was, in my past life, I attended most of their Civic Association meetings and worked with Karen and Terry Spence at that point to get funding through them and the Conservation District. This is also under the ordinance that Councilman Sheldon had, that three homes within that community have already been bought out because of the flooding and the repetitive flooding. I know that this is in a different area, but the bottom line is they are the bottom of the watershed. All of the water from everywhere has the tendency to go to them because the creek runs between them and Harmony Hills behind them. So,
but we're getting water, you know, until they build up MBNA, the hospital, okay, the cancer center, and the Omega Shop. We didn't have that much impervious cover. That was farmland across the way when I first moved there. Back before was a two-lane country road. And I used to thank God, because I worked in Philadelphia, say, oh God, I'm home in the country. And that, I can't say that anymore. And we appreciate the way that these parties take care of their properties. But more impervious cover means more water with no place to go. And we're downhill. And that tax ditch, what puzzles me is, if that is a private tax ditch, where the people living alongside of it have to pay for the maintenance and upkeep of that tax ditch, how can those commercial properties feed all their water from their retention ponds directly into that tax ditch or into Rutherford, which is a private community?
It was there before the development.
Right. What tax ditches were, I mean, that was there from farming. Most likely that's
right.
When the farms
did. To drain the land.
Right.
Where?
Right.
Rutherford?
Yeah.
That's infill.
The tax ditches were part of the
Rutherford
farming community.
Rutherford is infill.
Yeah, but
and
the tax ditches remain.
So is part of Christiana Hospital, because I used to hunt down there. And I know it used to be marshland down there. If you face the hospital, it would be on the left-hand side. That was all marshland there. That's all infill.
But I guess I have to agree with Councilman Cartier that, you know, there's got to be a more comprehensive way. I mean, there used to be money coming into the Conservation District where you knew you could get large projects done. That money just isn't there anymore.
Part of the problem is what we discussed earlier with Councilwoman Dillard's, that with the slides up here, we have heavy rains. And heavier rains, you know, the ground's already saturated. And then with the clay underneath, it's a runoff.
Yeah.
We don't have that much topsoil. And it's a runoff, and they're having problems now. But if you, I'm not saying it could happen or can't happen, but what I'm saying is that if you have a retention basin underneath, it helps hold the water and releases it slower. Right now, you're getting a lot of runoff because the ground is saturated, and it's going to keep getting saturated. We keep having these heavy rains.
But there are two retention ponds on the MBNA property.
Yeah, I know.
They feed into a small retention pond right in front of the Omega Shopping Center.
Right. They're different.
And then that overflow is what's flowing into the tax ditch. So these ponds that were built can't hold the water either.
At the time that they were built, and the study on them was done for that timeline, today we're having heavier rains. So, like Councilman Cartier said, we're going to have to enhance the area of what we're going to step forward with. Okay, we discussed public comment basically on the... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm Nancy Danker with the Rutherford Super Associates. She asked what you could do to help prevent these kinds of situations. And I've lived in Rutherford since the beginning. We never had all these problems. But you as council people are approving these projects without thinking about what is it affecting their surrounding areas. I mean, you approved this filet and Chick-fil-A in Wawa across from our street, not to mention the traffic concerns, but the drainage. It has never been, you guys didn't consider that. That should be your top priority when you know that Newcastle County is having all these issues on drainage. And you're not considering, this development is not, was there way before anything else that's on that road. And you just leave us at the mercy. And I don't think that's quite correct. We are taxpayers. And I think we should be considered. And so before you approved that Wawa, now we got to fight against it. You should have said, well, what about drainage issues? Does that ever been considered before you thought about that? Or are you just thinking about the money that that's going to bring Newcastle County?
Carol?
Hi, I'm Carol Dolan, Council, and I'm not familiar with the particular projects you're talking about, but it sounds like you're talking about approval of a subdivision plan. Is that correct?
Exploratory plan.
Exploratory plan. The reason I'm bringing this up, when it comes to rezonings, this body, this legislative body, has discretionary authority. When it comes to plans, this body has ministerial authority. In other words, the only thing that they can do under federal and state law is to remand the plan back up to 2 times to ask questions. They rely upon the land use department, the professionals in that area. So I just have to say on behalf of the body that I represent that it is somewhat unfair to imply that they're not asking about or concerned about drainage.
Well, we did have our president hear the audio of the land use meeting that was presented to council and then the council. And only a very few questions were asked, and there was never any public input. No public input prior to changing the use of a plan that had grandfathered deed restrictions.
And again, Carol Doolin, council to council, if I may, the president who presides over the meetings always invites public input on every plan.
Well,
that I'm aware of.
We're not notified by our council person or anyone else that there was a presentation on this particular plan, exploratory plan or provision. Mm-hmm. We had no input till after the vote.
Go ahead.
Carol Doolin, Council to Council. There are very strict mandates in the state code on notification in the newspaper of all the matters that come before county council. They're also posted on the website. And it is in accordance with law.
Is it in accordance with law that you should be notified by your council person if there's something of interest to the community that comes up?
That's a policy issue, and that is not a legal question, so I'm going to bow out at this point. Excuse me.
Councilman Holland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank council to council. We do have a code, and drainage is a great part of that code, so any application that I'm familiar with that has come through county council, drainage is right up there with traffic. So it still may get the approval if it meets the county code, but it's never a case where we just ignore drainage altogether. The new code has specific implications in there as relates to drainage, how much drainage is on that site before approval, and drainage cannot be increased after approval. So there are specifics in the code related to drainage that we do speak to. Now, you still may have a drainage issue. There are also cases where the drainage is improved as a result of redevelopment. So it's not always a negative, but again, with the engineering that's available to us that we're familiar with, we certainly address drainage. And as Council to Council mentioned, all of our agendas are published in the newspaper. Every item on our agenda is published. Our schedule is published. I don't know of another government in Delaware that has as much notification as Newcastle County government. To the extent that there's an issue or rezoning occurring in your district, there would be signage on that property to let anyone know who passed that there's some plan for this particular site. So I think this council goes quite a ways to inform the public of any land use application, because it's one of the major things that we do, and I think we all hold that dear, that we are very responsible in going forward with land use applications. There are certain things that's by right. Sometimes, as council mentioned, that it has met all the code qualifications, and this council cannot deny a plan to move forward if it meets the code. And sometimes we're not very happy, but that's what the code says. So we don't change the code every other Tuesdays to meet a specific application. And I'm not familiar with the one that you're speaking of now, and I'm not here to debate you. But you should know and feel the comfort that this council is very concerned about drainage, very concerned about traffic. But there is also certain criteria that we also have to look at. So we just can't think about it how we feel, how we think. There are certain models that we use. There are certain models that DLDOT use and DENREC. And all of these agencies do give approval to us before we move forward. So I don't know if an application that drains was just ignored by this body. I just don't recall that happening. It may have gotten the approval, as I said. You may not like it, but I don't recall us ignoring drainage.
During the audio of your meetings.
Ma'am, state your name, please.
Sorry, Donnie Shackey, Rutherford Civic Association. During the audio with your meetings, there was no, I apologize, no mention of drainage issues at all during the council. Sorry. Thank you. But there was no mention at all. That's another thing that upset us, really. You know, if there had been discussion, as you said, or of traffic and drainage, we would certainly, you know, understand that, you know, that there had been some discussion. But there, according to the audio, there was no discussion.
And that could be the case. If there's a specific parcel and that has not been brought to our attention, or the information that we received that we have read, and the fact that we read the recommendations from the planning board as well as the land use department. So there's a lot of reading that goes on as well. And usually it is the neighbors who would say that we have a serious drainage issue here as well, as they do with traffic and other kinds of concerns. So the specific meeting that you're talking about may not have been heavy with a lot of discussion around the issue of drainage. But the fact of the matter is we get written recommendations from the tech agencies, as well as the planning board hearings, the hearings we have here, which is a committee meeting, as well as the meeting downstairs. And all of these meetings are open to the public.
They're all planning board meetings.
Okay, that's a different situation.
George?
Mr. Chair. George Haggard, Assistant General Manager. And is Carol still here?
No. She just stepped out.
She's walking back.
She handed me the code section. You want this?
The plan that they're talking about is an old DPUD.
Yeah. Right.
So it had a different set of criteria attached to it. All this body did was approve an exploratory sketch plan to establish uses, certain right. types of uses. It did not establish, it did not approve a plan. The plan still has to go through an approval process, a UDC approval process, and has to meet all the criteria that would be in the UDC. So water still has to be evaluated, traffic still has to be evaluated, setbacks still have to be evaluated, all the concurrency pieces have to be, you got to make sure you got sewer capacity and things like that. But the process for the DPUD is the exploratory sketch plan gets delivered to County Council, County Council looks at that and reviews it and signs off on that as an approval to adjust any of the uses that may be on that particular plan or add uses to it or agree to those uses. The fact that that happened doesn't mean that the plan has status at that point, only has the ability to now be processed further on. So, not that I always like to try to defend you, but...
But thank you for that.
Anything else? Councilman Weiner?
Yeah, just... an awareness that we have, there's constitutional protections for property owners, and when their property rights vest, and we've already approved things in accordance with code, we can do our best to second guess what citizens might provide us or what the law should be, but our hands are tied to a certain extent, but it's incumbent upon every citizen to read the Saturday Legals, just as it's incumbent upon the representatives that sit around this table to listen to the public input.
So,
Councilman Cartier?
Don't let her. I yield to the
So for those individuals here who don't get...
Pardon me?
May I ask Donnie Shankey, Rutherford. For those individuals who don't receive...
State your name, ma'am. Every time you speak, you've got to state your name.
She did.
Donnie Shankey, Rutherford, the Civic Association. And comment to Mr. Weiner's comment. Those people who do not get the news journal daily or pick up the Saturday paper, which I get the paper daily. I have for 34 years. But I don't always read the paper every single day. I don't always have time to read the paper. Who can we depend upon to get advice regarding issues in our community?
Yeah, I'd be happy to answer that question. I'd be happy to answer
that
question.
Is that the end of your statement?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. The concern I share with you about the public not always reading the newspaper, either online or at our libraries or in person. However, that's why we passed the Greater Notification Ordinance, which posts a sign on each site, which gives the public actual notice of plans that are going forward. There are certain citizenship responsibilities, and they have to be shared with the people around this table. So we're going to have to rely upon citizens, because we can't notify ourselves of every drainage issue, because citizens live in the areas. They should take it upon them responsibilities, and the civic leaders particularly must do that. I know I, as a personal practice, I read the Saturday Legals, whether I'm in town or not, electronically. I notify my communities every time something comes out, whether it's a minor or a major, but that's my personal responsibility. That doesn't change the responsibility of each citizen to take a look at the yellow signs on a site or to electronically check at their libraries. And with land use comes responsibilities, and also the United States Constitution, it's a pesky document, but it does provide certain responsibilities, and we have to balance the legitimate rights of the landowner, the immediate community, and the community at large, and sometimes those are three diverse interests.
Mm-hmm. And it's also on the our website. Mm-hmm. And on, I believe on Channel 22, they've been putting some projects on there, too. Councilwoman?
Yes, I'd like to request that we have a discussion of that study, the stormwater utility study, at the next land use meeting. I think it's time to dust that off and bring it forward. I've never seen it myself. I think that, seeing the pictures that we've seen, this needs to be comprehensive. We can't do this piecemeal, and I think it's time to take a look at that. Mm-hmm.
Two aides are writing it down now.
Excellent.
George?
Mr. Chair, wherever you'd like to have that discussion, I'm sure it would be good. Just to let you know that the chair of that committee was Wayne Merritt in Special Services, and that project ran through Special Services because
they do
a lot of the drainage. And not that we're not very interested in stormwater. I wouldn't want to get him upset at
me. We'll invite him.
Wait a second.
He's going to thank you.
Go ahead, John.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, are we under other?
Well, we were supposed to, and then a public comment came up, too, so
All right. We
kind of put them together. So what do you want?
Well, I'm going to continue this discussion of drainage and water and problems, but I just want to pose a question to George, and just let me frame the thing that I encountered. I was at a rule to show cause hearing today that had to do with a drainage issue related to an infill, single family home infill project in an established neighborhood. And, I heard our county building inspector referencing this 5,000 square foot standard for disturbance to trigger review and so forth. And I just wanted, George, you don't have to get back to me immediately, but I do recall that I authored an ordinance that reduced that level of disturbance for review for, essentially where the water is going to go on the site down to 480 square feet. And I don't know if that's clear to all these different people in land use that we do have that standard, because, with all this small infill development, you do get impacts on adjacent neighbors. So that's why we went down that road, if you recall. And I just want to circle back on that issue. Maybe you can talk to me later about that or send me an email. That I hope, you know, we're clear in land use that that's now a 480 square foot, you know, standard. It's not 5,000. I heard it repeatedly mentioned, and you know, maybe I'm not getting the context or anything, but it had to do with new construction of a single family home, and we went to that 480 square foot standard, so we would even catch a garage structure, as I recall, being built with that. So we could have some regulation of water issues on even small construction like that. So I just want to throw that out to you.
Want me to address this in front of the court?
Sure.
Okay. The 480 square feet, George Haggerty, 480 square feet is the same threshold number that's used for a lines and grades plan. And the 480 square foot addition that was added was an addition that said you had to show and prove you had adequate capacity for the water to go somewhere. The 5,000 square foot threshold is a threshold that says you have to have a stormwater plan, an ENS plan, and things of this nature. So the most important thing when the smaller pieces is oftentimes to make sure that the water has some place to go, as opposed to being concerned about the erosion and sediment, which can normally be picked up in off a lines and grades plan that we require anyway for anything beyond 480. But you are absolutely correct. We did that. We have, I think, tried to work that as diligently as we possibly can. If you're saying one of those humans that worked for me didn't quite get it right, we can probably take a look at that. But no, the only distinction is 480 to 5,000 is adequate conveyance. Most of the times they're looking at putting the water in the DelDOT system, and we're telling them to go to DelDOT to get approval to put that water, whatever that extra water is, in that particular system. Anything over 5,000, it's a stormwater management plan, erosion sediment control plan as well.
Yeah, we had a meeting on that last year, I believe, a year and a half ago, something like that.
I don't know. That was a good ordinance.
Council President?
At the behest of the council, based on our last executive meeting, I did go see the county executive, and I wanted to talk about it today to inform the council and not wait till next Tuesday. Council member Street joined me in the meeting, and I want to report to you all, particularly Janet and Tim, that the as it relates to Three Little Bakers Golf Course, that whole issue, that the meeting with the county exec was fruitful, positive. He was all ears, and we were all talk. And secondly, we requested and he consented that the county attorney and Max Walton, the outside counsel, will be invited to address the council Tuesday at the executive committee and to brief us on the status and to ascertain and answer any questions that the council has. So I didn't want to let any more time elapse. I wanted to address this today. And hopefully the discussion will be respectful and civil, and we will have an adult discussion regarding those issues. Councilmember Street, would you like to add anything?
I thought the meeting was fruitful as you did, and I think there's a genuine commitment from the executive to try to address the concerns the council had and certainly raised that day, to do all we can to eliminate discrepancies as it relates to how we proceed in legal matters affecting the county. Everybody can be a Monday morning quarterback and you can attribute things to this and that, but there was some poor communication, some miscommunication, and the effort now is to try to prevent future occurrences. And I think we at least got an understanding that we're going to try to take the positive path and work together to the extent practical going forward. And the the need to have the meeting, to have the briefing with both the county attorney and counsel that's been retained and been working on the case was very, very important as a good start to at least addressing the instant matter and, again, doing what we can to eliminate future occurrences.
I believe Councilwoman Kopacka.
No, I didn't have my hand up.
Okay. Well, before you did, I didn't know. Still want to ask a question?
No, I'm good.
Let's see, Ms. Schultz.
Yes.
Peggy Schultz.
Yeah, I see. She had her hand up first.
Legal women voters, I'd like to repeat my invitation to council as well as members of the public to attend a Sea Level Rise forum tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at Limestone Presbyterian Church on Limestone Road. It's co-sponsored by Delaware Interfaith Power and Light and Delaware Nature Society. And I think it'll be really interesting. The recommendations of the governor's Sea Level Rise Advisory Committee will be presented. And there will be a talk on the morality of sea level rise responses as well as the scientific background. And there's also a meeting next Tuesday night, and I think Councilman Hollins pointed out that's during your council meeting, but it's outside your jurisdiction anyway in Southbridge. But I hope you can all come to the meeting at Limestone Presbyterian.
Thank you. Councilman Warner?
Thanks. I'd like to follow up on the conversation that previously before that other topic. Just so that there's some sort of paper trail, I'm wondering if, and first I'd like to thank both Council President and Councilman Street for following up on this, but I suggest that there be some sort of letter confirming the conversation so that there's no confusion as to what our understanding is as to the responsibilities, duties, rights of the different branches of government.
Fine.
Thank you.
If that's the will of the council.
Just curious.
Anybody else, Mr. President?
Yes. Go
ahead. Anybody else want to chime in on that?
I think it's a standard protocol after meetings.
Yes, that'd be good. Just send an email around. Councilman Cartier?
I just want to thank the leadership of our council president and Councilman Street in that regard to clarifying this, legal issues and representation, and it's a very critical issue, and I want to thank you for, achieving, I think, a good result for all concerned.
If I might add, I might suggest that Carol Doolin could be helpful since it's dealing with a legal point for her to participate in helping you put together your thoughts.
Council and Council.
Yes.
I was not present. I don't think that would be appropriate. No.
Okay.
That's just what the meeting would be about, I guess.
Okay.
That'd be the email. Okay. Since we discussed the other and public comment, we kind of joined them together. We got one more item. It's called adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Carol.
What's that?